Welcome to Share a Pint, where we tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host. Today I'm talking with John Esposito from Chesapeake Real Ale Brewing. Thanks for being on the show, John.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Your name is Algonquin for Village at a Big River or Great Shellfish Bay. Right. So it's clear that looking around here, you can see the large blue crab on the wall. The logo's beautifully burned into the flight boards. So clearly you embrace the Maryland culture and the history.
Absolutely.
So share with us a little bit why that was important when you were developing your identity and your brand.
Well, the original thought was to have a Chesapeake-related name. Mm-hmm. When I started looking around, I didn't want to be just Chesapeake Real Ale Brewing. There's already another Chesapeake brewery, so I didn't want to cause confusion there. Mm-hmm. But I still wanted to honor the Chesapeake. So, honestly, found the name through a Google search. I started looking for, I think I was typing in things like interesting Chesapeake names, and things like that. And after hundreds and hundreds of different choices and options, I saw that and said, I like that. And that's where it came from.
Well, that's awesome. Well, you're Maryland's smallest brewery, producing just one barrel at a time, yet you have about 20 beers on tap, including several cask beers. So talk about how you're able to brew so many different beers despite being a small brewery.
Lots of labor, unfortunately. One of the things about being a small brewery is it takes just as much hours in the day, just as much labor to brew one batch or one barrel versus say 10 or 20 barrels. It's still a 6, 7, 8 hour brew day no matter how you slice it. I hate to say it, but unfortunately I'm just kind of killing myself doing it. There is no other secret to it.
Okay, and I think you mentioned that you'd brewed over 367 different beers in just the little over a year that you've been open?
2 years.
Okay.
We just had our 2 year anniversary a month ago today.
Okay.
A month ago today, yeah.
It's still a lot of different beers, in that short period of time.
It is, lots and lots of small batches. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes we even take one barrel batch and split it into two different things.
Okay.
So I might transfer out of the fermenter and maybe age it on something different or just do something different to it. Mm-hmm. So that definitely keeps the variety going.
For sure. Tell me a little bit about not necessarily having particular flagship beers, but just constantly rotating styles and things like that.
When I set out to do this, I just made a rule for myself. We are not going to have a flagship. I didn't want to be one of these breweries that has four beers, and you're always going to get this. And with the setup that we have, with the tiny system, it just fits perfectly into doing small batches.
Yeah.
So why limit ourselves to only a couple styles? So, we have, even right now on tap, we have German beers, English beers, American, no Belgians on at this moment, but we rotate through all those kind of things.
Right.
There's just no rules we have to always have this. Now, over time, there's been a couple beers that have sort of evolved into almost always being here just because the regulars get mad when they're not here. But even then, we might go a month without having something.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. Are there any particular styles, because you can do so many different ones, that you like to do just to introduce people to different styles of beer they're not familiar with?
I'll tell you, I love English style beers. Mm-hmm. I don't like being categorized as an English style brewery. I mean, I think right now we have two on tap, so it's not out of 24, so it's not exactly like we're strong on English, heavy on English beers.
Uh-huh.
But I like the style, and I think they're a great beer for folks that might not, we get a lot of people that come in and say, oh, I don't like hops, I don't want real bitter beers.
Mm-hmm.
So English styles are perfect for that, German styles are perfect for that, other than the Pilsners.
Mm-hmm.
So we always have, we have a Kolsch or a Red Kolsch that we developed that's pretty much here, I'd say 80% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Something like the Nut Brown that I'm drinking now, that's very traditional English Nut Brown. But at the same time, we might do something completely wacky and do a Nut Brown aged on coconut or some other, really whatever I kind of come up with at the moment.
Right. Well, that's the beauty of the small brewery then, right? I mean, you can experiment and...
It lets me take risks, too, because worst case is, if I really mess something up, I'm only dumping a barrel of beer, which, knock on wood, have not done yet.
Good. That's good. And then you have quite a few cask beers.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we're hearing more and more about when we talked with Rob at Checkerspot. He has Steve Marsh with him there, the great cask whisperer from Heavy Seas.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always going to have a cask one.
Right.
But a lot of places don't, and you just don't have one. You have several. So tell me about the...
Yeah, we keep eight beer engines. We have a behind the behind the back bar, we have a separate cask cooler. Mm-hmm. So we keep everything separate. We try to do cask right. Drives me absolutely batty, quite honestly, when I see a bar or a brewery that just throws a cask on the bar and say, hey, look at us, we have cask ale.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you know, it's warming up to 70 degrees, and then they tell you, oh yeah, it's supposed to be room temperature. No, none of that's true. Mm. And it just gives cask a bad name. So we're trying to do it the right way.
Okay, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. How's the reception been for that? Since again, it's different and people aren't normally used to that.
It is. It's been an introductory, you know, mm-hmm. we definitely sell more draft than cask. Mm-hmm. I mean, we also have twice or three times the offerings too.
Sure.
So we're going to sell more naturally. But we absolutely have developed a regular following of cask ale lovers for sure.
That's cool. That's awesome. Well, you have a bit of a unique program that many breweries around here don't have, and that's the guest brewer program. Mm-hmm. But it's not what most people think of when they hear cask that. So tell our listeners what your program is about and then how you're able to do something like that mm-hmm. with a small batch brewery.
Well, it actually is enabled by the fact that we're small batch.
Okay.
So yeah, we have a brewer, it's kind of more of a brewer for a day program. Mm-hmm. So somebody can sign up, come in, they can tell us what they want to brew. If they have a recipe, you know, we'll work with them with that recipe. Mm-hmm. Or most of the time it's more of an idea. Yeah, I have an idea for something, but maybe I've never brewed before or I brewed once, something like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, they'll come in, I'll finalize the recipe with them. They come in, spend the day brewing. Mm-hmm. And typically because we're one barrel, but we do 2 1 barrel batches side by side is kind of my normal brew day. So we actually have 2 separate 1 barrel systems back there.
Uh-huh.
And so in the course of the brew day, their brewer for the day program, they're going to brew their beer. They'll get to name it. Then come back later for a happy hour, mm-hmm. you know, like a release party basically for their beer. Mm-hmm. And at the same time too, I'll be brewing a second beer with them, so they'll actually get kind of double the experience on the brewer for the brewer day. Mm-hmm. And they get, you know, come in, they get dirty, they start from, you know, starting sanitizing the pumps all the way to cleaning up at the end of the day.
Okay. Yeah. And clearly you've had a lot of interest. There's a wall full of...
It took forever for us to put that wall up. but yeah, we have a wall that is, and there's probably another dozen that we haven't gotten up there yet. Wow. That are slow, you know, we're slowly adding the frames to the wall, and mm-hmm. it's our kind of our guest brewer wall of fame. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So clearly a lot of interest in that.
Yeah, and if you look at the styles that are over there, you'll mm-hmm. see some of the most creative things. You know, I like to think of myself as somewhat creative, mm-hmm. but some of the most creative ideas have come from the guests.
Awesome.
And I mean, just literally things I would never have thought of. And a few of them have evolved into either beers that we keep on in rotation or maybe flavor profiles that... like we had one guest brewer who wanted to put Earl Grey tea on an English bitter,
uh-huh.
and since then we've used Earl Grey on 3, 4, 5 other beers just because it worked out so well.
Uh-huh.
So little things like that.
That's great. So how exactly does that work? How does someone, if they're interested and they're listening to this or watching mm-hmm. this and they would say, hey, that is really cool, I want to do that, when they contact you, how does that process work?
There's 2 ways. One is we have a loyalty program where mm-hmm. basically you get a point per dollar that you spend, like a lot of places.
Uh-huh.
When you get to 1,000 points, you can trade it in for to be a guest brewer.
Okay.
And we're getting, you know, a lot of people doing that. Or you can also just buy the package.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's awesome. Well, you know, talk about the local badge that you have on Untappd.
Mm-hmm.
A few places have them, but yours again is a little unique because you kind of give people rewards for leveling up as opposed to just earning it one time.
Right. Yeah. It's So Untappd, in all honesty, has taken me a long time to embrace. It's a wonderful tool for being able to, you know, to check in beers, see what you've drank.
Mm-hmm.
It has a nice marketing reach. So mm-hmm. we're able to use the badge. You know, the local badge is something we just did 6 weeks ago, maybe, mm-hmm. when they came out. They finally just made them available. So we were one of the first in the area to jump on that local mm-hmm. badge thing. And I can't remember the levels off the top of my head, but maybe mm-hmm. 5, 10, 15, something like every 5 or 10 levels. Yeah, mm-hmm. we have stickers, pint glasses, t-shirts, things like that we give you as a little reward for being loyal to us.
Mm-hmm.
It goes hand in hand with our other loyalty program.
Mm-hmm.
The negative part of Untappd are the you know, the false experts out there, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, I think if you know, looking at kind of trying to find a middle road on that, if it's not a particular style that's your style that you like, you take that into account. And so you either don't rate it or you go,
Which I think is fine.
And I've got a lot of friends who do that. I've got a friend of mine, Joe, we both are not big fans of coffee and coffee flavor in our beer.
Right.
And, you know, and that's in a style and it says that, that's great. You know, we hate when we get surprised by a stout or a porter where someone doesn't tell you. But if they tell you...
Yeah, but if you're ordering a coffee stout, then don't slam it because you don't like coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we look at if you say it and we're not into it, then we don't order.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, if we have a stout or a porter that didn't say it was in there and we have it, you know, we'll just go, hey, we're not going to rate that. Because
Which makes sense. Because
I don't want to affect someone else who might actually pay attention to it and say, well, you didn't like it, you know, and you have a lot of check-ins, so I should, you know, trust
what
you say.
People don't realize, you know, they don't realize, okay, that one, you know, that's hurting us. It's hurting our reputation because there are so many people, unfortunately, that go by these ratings, which I think should not happen either. I would love Untappd, actually, if you just got rid of the ratings. Just do check-ins, do all the other things that it does. I think it'd be fantastic, but the ratings just drive me batty. And then they moved to tenths of points. So, you know, now, you know, okay, yes, this is a 3.6, not a 3.7 or a 3.5. I'm like, are you joking? Are you... Who's that?
Yeah,
you know,
they gave that as I know a lot of the guys do, they gave that as if you're a supporter and you contribute.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's an upgrade
then. Then it opens that up. But otherwise, I looked at that and I'm like, that's too much.
Oh, it's just
it's
crazy.
Too much of an nth degree because who's to say this is a 3.7 or 3.8?
Right.
Or
tell me what the difference between that is. Our very first one with a tenth was like a 3.9. Mm-hmm. I'm like, really? It was a, you know,
it's almost
not
a four.
Quite a four, you know. Anyway, it's just sorry.
No,
I didn't mean to get off track.
It's good. Well, again, everybody has different experiences, and clearly they've got their footprint out in the craft beer industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you navigate that? If it works for you and people like it and they embrace it, how do you do that? If you don't, how do you navigate through it? So, you know, it is interesting to hear that while that might not be, you know, what you want to do to have represent your beers out there for people, you do understand a marketing connection and go, how do I find that middle ground?
And that's why, like I said, I resisted it for the longest time.
Sure.
You know, it's just because I personally don't. I've never checked in a beer. Mm-hmm. I don't do it. Mm-hmm. When they, I guess it's probably been 2 months now. Whenever they came out with the local badge, I immediately said yes.
Yeah.
You know, despite the fact I'm like, yes, I hate you people. But yes, take and by the way, it's like $50 extra a month. It's not a free thing. So it's,
right. I think we were talking with Dave at Brewery Fire, and they were saying that it was like a year commitment.
I don't even know what I committed to.
Because there aren't, you know, a lot of people that are doing it enough to say, well, how does that work?
Right.
You know, everybody knows about the badges if they use Untappd, but the local ones are, like I said, they're a little different. I don't see as many around here. I like that, though.
I actually think that's a cool part of Untappd.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so I think... I think Untappd's $60 a month just to have the account, and then it's another, so it's another 50. So we're paying $110 a month now to Untappd.
Yeah.
You know, which ticks me off too. But I see everything except for the ratings I love.
Right.
You know, I would be all over it if it were, and in fact, I've even asked them, like, you know, we've just started using the events portion. Yeah, there are ways to put your events in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's halfway useful. You know, like, for example, I had put the, we had something. Oh, it was our birthday last month. You know, I put our birthday in mid-January or early January. I guess it was February 8th was our event, and I think I put it in right around the 1st of January. Well, it just got buried. There was like, there's no event reminder. So we were literally standing right here in the bar, and everybody's going on to Untappd. Like, can't find the event. You know, you would think that there would be like some pop-up that would say, this is happening this week or something.
Yeah.
And it seems to get lost. So. You know, I sat there and I entered in 4 months worth of events that we had planned, and now I realize I did all that, and you have to do each one manually too. There's
no template, it's not an easy drop-down menu or something.
Yeah, the back office is not easy. So even if we have a weekly karaoke, for example, I can't do karaoke and then just put each weekend like you could like on a Facebook event or something else. Have to enter in each one of them. So I did all that all at once, and I realized, oh, they're all buried.
Yeah,
you know, like, and they're not popping up like. So I would love that. I would love that to be fixed. I would love to have what's like the gating, where like if you come into the area and something pops up, hey, this is in your area.
Yeah.
You know, and I would pay for that actually. Yeah. You know, so an untapped user's driving down Route 3.
Right.
Oh, hey, brewery right there. I think that's actually pretty valuable.
Yeah. So, notification, that'd be interesting, like that.
Like they call that that area the geofencing. That's what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, where so you get within 3 miles of, you know, like you set a radius, and then within 3 miles it pops up. You know, Chesapeake, it's happy hour, or you know, there, or karaoke night, or you know, whatever's popping up. I'd actually pay extra for that.
Yeah.
But anyway,
it's interesting. Yeah. Well, where can people find you online? You know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, things like that.
Yep. So we are we try to do most of our marketing through Facebook.
Okay.
Which I realize is not everybody's thing, but it's pretty broad based. We have an Instagram page now, which is maybe 2 months old at this point. So we're just getting going on Instagram. And of course our webpage at brewcrab.com.
Sorry. That's a good one, Brewcrab. Yeah.
Brewcrab, yeah. So there was no chance I was gonna do a domain, you know, ChesapeakeRealAleBrewery.com and expect anybody to figure out how to spell that. So I tried to simplify it, so just Brewcrab.
Yeah, that's good.
And that's also our Facebook, slash Brewcrab.
So everything's at Brewcrab?
Except
for meal handles?
Except for Instagram, which is actually at Chesapeake, Chesapeake Real Ale Brewery. I think we actually did the whole name on that because we had an early employee who tried to set up a page for Instagram, butchered it, and that used up our Brewcrab name.
They wouldn't fix it for you. So.
No. So we had to work around that.
Okay. Well, we'll get that up on our show notes and put it up on our website at sharepintpodcast.com.
Nice, thanks.
You bet. We've learned about the brewery, so let's get to know you a little bit better, John. Tell us about your role here.
Well, I'm the owner, and the brewer, and the floor sweeper, and the assistant brewer, and all the things in the back. So right now, I do everything in the back of the house, and then we have a great staff up here in the front of the house that takes care of the bartending and everything you see in the tap room. You know, my next big goal is to be able to actually hire an assistant brewer, and you know, as we keep progressing into profitability, I'll be able to afford one at some point.
And then the space-wise, let's say that happens, do you have the ability, should you choose to expand beyond the two barrel?
Yeah, when we leased the place and then did the design, it is meant to have a larger system side by side with the smaller system.
Okay.
I don't ever want to get rid of the smaller system, but I would love to have the larger one next to it, because right now we're so small that we can't really do any distribution, and that would really be the next big step. And, and we get bars and restaurants that call us weekly, hey, can we get a tap of X, Y, or Z?
Right.
And the answer is always no, because we don't have a backup keg to even send you. And then not only yes, we sent it to you, and then when you say great, we drank that, we want another one, then you know I have to say sorry, we don't have that.
Right.
So having the bigger system would be a huge step forward, and I keep going back and forth whether you know I need to go through a fundraising effort to do that, and I'm getting closer and closer to wanting to do that actually.
Okay. So it was potentially part of the business plan to say, hey, down the road we may look to expand beyond what we're doing.
Absolutely. In fact, so in the brewery design, we built our floor drain down the middle, sort of the middle of the floor, with the idea that small system on one side, the larger system on the other, so everything would flow into the drain.
Oh, okay.
So it's there, the infrastructure's there, it's just a matter of the equipment now.
Sure.
And honestly, a couple years ago, we were close to pulling the trigger on doing it right on day one. We had so many delays with the county that it ate up so much of that budget that it became unaffordable at that point.
Right, right. Well, tell us how you got started in the craft beer industry.
Brewed my first batch of beer in 1984, homebrew batch. That year, this is down in Virginia. There was actually a local craft brewer, microbrewer back then, who was way way ahead of his time, and he's long since gone. But I had started driving down. He was about 40 minutes from where I was, and I would drive down, and he kind of taught me everything. The basics, so I would go down and brew with him, be his laborer, learn how to dig out the mash tun and all that kind of stuff, and so he taught me a lot. It gave me the bug. A few years later, that bug kind of kept growing. Mm-hmm. So a few years later, I said, I'm going to do this, and this is at this point the early '90s. So in 1994, opened my first brewery. Thought it was going to be a brew pub. Ended up just being a brewery, production brewery.
Okay.
And we kind of grew pretty fast. So we, you know, we had gotten to the point where by 1999 we were one of the 20 largest microbreweries and one of the 50 largest breweries in the country. I sold all that in 2001 or 2000, late 2000, and stepped away for a while. And the bug was always there, though.
Okay.
So when I moved to Maryland about 10 years ago, I saw the landscape was just starting to change. And one of the big things for me was that breweries were now allowed to have tap rooms. Mm-hmm. That was just becoming a thing. So back in the 90s, you know, we had a large production brewery, but we couldn't sell you a beer. You could come in for a tour, we could give you a sip of something, mm-hmm. you could buy a t-shirt and go away. We couldn't sell you beer to go, we couldn't sell you, you couldn't sit around and have a pint. And that, you know, that always was annoying, but that was the law. And so as I saw the laws changing here in Maryland, I thought, wow, I might want to do this again. And then here in Anne Arundel County, it wasn't until 2015 that they changed the zoning laws to allow a brewery space to go into anything other than heavy industrial. So up until then, it was heavy industrial zoning only.
Okay.
And if you look at the county map, there was like this one tiny, tiny little pinpoint that was heavy industrial. I still don't even know where it was. So it basically kept breweries out of the county. I guess it was the 2015 General Assembly, and then the county rules that changed that right after that to allow for some other versions of industrial zoning, which allowed us to come into a industrial space like this. And that was when I saw that, I said, all right, I'm doing this. And still took a couple of years to get open from there.
So you kind of touched on it a little bit, but expand maybe on what are your biggest challenges have been, like it's feeling.
The biggest challenge early on, so we, you know, the building that we're sitting in, I signed the lease in 2015. We opened in early 2018. Spent 10 months fighting with the health department here in Anne Arundel over, despite the fact that the health department has no jurisdiction at all over breweries anywhere in the state, just because there's no food involved, so it's not, it just doesn't come under their purview. Despite that, they held up our building plans for 10 months because they kept saying, well, where's your kitchen? We kept saying, we don't need a kitchen. And the response back would be, okay, so where's your kitchen? And you have this circular argument for literally for 10 months. While we were paying rent on an empty space, which is part of where the bigger brew system went. So things like that were challenging for sure. Yeah, but we got through it, and so now the bigger challenge or the ongoing challenge is just trying to make customers happy, get them in the door, get them to come back again, and you know, our only goal here is to be the kind of the Crofton neighborhood brewery. We're not looking to sell beer in Frederick. We're not looking to sell beer in Philadelphia. You know, all we want to do is be the local brewery, and so far so good.
Okay. Well, that kind of segues nicely into telling me how you were able to stay committed during these difficult times.
I know it's a silly answer, but I think once you're in, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound at that point. So there was, once you've got a lease signed and once you've got equipment sitting there, there's no turning back. So you just keep fighting. And that's really what happened.
I think that's it. We're hearing more and more as we talk to different breweries, the same type of thing. They're like, you get to a point where you're like, we don't have a choice. We have to succeed. No matter what it is, we just have to find a way.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, here in the, they said here with Anne Arundel, being the first to open Anne Arundel, we had to teach them some of the rules. The building department had no clue what to look at with a, okay, so what is a brewery? So we had to explain, all right, we're not a big factory, we're not, and I tried to, I remember one day describing to the, I think it was the, maybe the, one of the head of the building department, I was like, we could pretty much, I was telling him, look, I could pretty much build our entire brew system in your kitchen, maybe a tiny bit bigger, but not much bigger than what would go in your kitchen. And I think that opened up, because I think they're thinking, oh, well, gosh, I visited Williamsburg 20 years ago and I went to the Anheuser-Busch factory. That's what you're building? And I'm like, no, we're not. I think once they get over that, so we had a, despite the health department issue, we had a lot of great support actually from people in the county. The folks at the county liquor board were fantastic. The building department was great. Fire department was great. It was really just once you had to get through just a little bit of a learning curve more than anything.
And I'm finding that's more and more when I talk to different breweries, it's interesting that the counties are so I don't know a better way to put it other than just kind of they segregate themselves off. But completely. I mean, it's not like Anne Arundel County can talk to Howard County or Baltimore and other places that have these breweries and say, hey, for example, these breweries in this county talk to those people, how that works to help here if you're pioneering the trail. But
that's exactly how that 10-month period ended. I finally, and the other thing, of course, you know, I'm not going to say her name, but the woman would never answer the phone. She would never return calls. Mm-hmm. Finally, 7:30 a.m. that morning, I get her on the phone, and and she's like, "Well, where's your kitchen?" Same thing. So going back in this circular argument, where's your kitchen? Yeah. You don't need a kitchen. Yeah. So then finally, I was like, "Please do me one favor. Mm. Pick any county in the state. I don't care. I'm not going to tell you which one." Yeah. I said, "Just find one that has a." So we're in state terms, we're a class 5 brewery. So I said, just pick any other state or any other county in the state that has a class 5 brewery. Right. Call your counterpart, please. Yeah. Tell us what to, just ask them, what did they do?
Right.
So, and I'm not joking, this was a 7:30, 8 a.m. conversation, mm-hmm. 1 p.m., get an email. We've signed off on your building plans because we have no jurisdiction over your plan. I'm saying, okay, this is exactly what I told you 10 months ago.
So
you talk about not, so fortunately she was able to talk to a counterpart at another county, but she could have easily have done that 10 months earlier too.
Sure.
And not wasted way too much time and money.
Yeah. So what contributed to your success, especially during those difficult times? And you said you get to a point where you're like, you're all in, you just got to figure it out. But what contributed to being successful?
I think we started, once we got, not even before, I was very, very hesitant to announce that we were even opening until I was fairly certain of the timeline.
Sure.
And even with that, we were 2 months late, even from that, from that big buffered timeline.
Yeah.
What I didn't want to do was make this big splash announcement that says, we're opening on such and such a day. And then 6 months more go by and nobody hears from us.
Right.
And so I was very, very careful to announce it. So in the end, we only announced that we were opening about 3 months before we opened.
Okay.
And one of the things that we did right from the beginning was really embrace just the folks here locally. I actually had dozens and dozens of people come over and drink beer in my basement, when I was doing test batches, trying to just get the word out that, hey, there's this idiot that's about to open a brewery in Crofton. his beers aren't terrible, that kind of thing.
Right.
And then if you look around all the painting here, mm-hmm. we had a paint party before there's any other, when it was just walls.
Right.
We had about 30 something people come in. I actually set up a bunch of taps, bought pizza, and we had a big painting party.
Nice.
And I think just trying to develop a little bit of community feel to it.
Sure.
And I would say of those 30 something people, all but a couple of them are still regulars here. I probably should know specifically, but it seems like they're all still here.
So that worked out well then.
Yeah, that was fun. And that was a fun day too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Well, again, remind people where they can find you online.
Online, Brewcrab, BrewCrab. Uh-huh. I always have to say CRAB because it sounds a little bit like CRAP.
Yeah.
So brewcrab.com, Facebook/Brewcrab, mm-hmm. and Instagram, Chesapeake Real Ale Brewery. We have no Twitter, never will. That's how you find us. Again, most everything is up to date on Facebook first, mm-hmm. Just because that's the easiest way to update events and everything. So,
sure.
And we have a full calendar of weekly events that we do.
Great. Again, we'll put that up on our show notes on our website. Well, John, I want to thank you for your time and for sharing a pint with me.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Share a Pint is released bi-weekly on Friday mornings and can be found at sharepintpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at share_pint. Show notes for this episode are available at sharepintpodcast.com. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin McLeod and can be found online at incompetech.com. Share a Pint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at sharepintpodcast.com or email us at jerry@sharepintpodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Holla. Prost.